comparable movements of the Nazi Party in other nations?
The American Nazi Party is the American section of the World Union of National Socialists, of which I am the international head. And we set that up in the Cotswolds in England when I was over there and the Scotland Yard was chasing me around.
So what is the international... To what nation do the international Nazis owe their loyalty?
Each closure is national loyalty to his nation.
Well, how can you call it an international loyalty?
Well, the Zionists have one and they claim they're loyal. The Catholics have one and they claim they're loyal.
It's not
formal,
I'm not sure.
What? The Catholics have a very formal organization. They have a fellow called the Pope over there. It's quite formal. He does pretty good.
Your program, under the title The Negro Region Park, we shall appropriate $10 billion a year for 5 years from the money now being wasted by the old immigration poured into foreign aid, lost on Negro crime, and used the money to build a modern industrial nation in Africa, complete with shopping centers, airlines, superhighways, cities and handsome suburbs, and anything else to make it finest in the world. And then grant $10,000 to every Negro family, 5 or more migrating to the new land, help them build a home, and establish a business,
et cetera.
Now, what I want to know is how can this Negro, the inferior race, maintain a society on his own, which would be comparable to the one he enjoys now, even as a second-class citizen?
I want to give him that chance. They say they can't. I don't think they can. But I think they want to be given the chance. I say right here, this is what we want to do. We want to give them every... We dragged them here in chains. And I think that was wrong. And we've done them wrong ever since. And we're still doing them wrong. I don't think that means we have to mix with them. I think it simply means we ought to give them the opportunity to see what they can do. Like our folks did. When they didn't like it in Europe, they went over here into the wilderness and made their own great country. I think that we ought to help our Negroes, since we stole them. We ought to help them get over back over there and make their own country, see what they can do.
So perhaps help them
while they're here. Well, in that case, I'd be willing to turn over Brooklyn and Miami Beach and see how they can do.
Here on behalf of the white Christian majority of America. What he meant to say was, he's a Nazi. This is Joe Pine, and I'll be right back. Yeah, I'm a Nazi.
Lincoln Rockwell's enormous dialectical skill is a subject in itself, but no sampling of his oral expression would be complete without at least some indication of his great ability to hammer out ideas in the face of extremely heavy opposition. Joe Pine was the establishment's well-paid expert at quashing unpopular personalities with a barrage of abuse and insults disguised as an interview. But as the following excerpt from their famous half-hour-long radio battle will show, he more than met his match in Commander Rockwell. For every aspersion, evasion, and half-informed observation he could put forward, his opponent replied with solid documentation, wit, and unshakable logic.
Well, you are a Nazi, aren't you?
I am.
And there's nothing American about a Nazi, so why do you call yourself the head of the American Nazi Party? That's a contradiction in terms. We've been through this before. A Nazi is, above all things, a racist, a man who believes in the white race as the people who built white Western civilization. And I might point out that the greatest government that was ever created, the American Constitutional Republic, was set up by people, most of whom kept slaves. They didn't believe Negroes were equal, all the way up to Abraham Lincoln, and that's what I believe. There's nothing un-American about that. You know, your sentence just began, a Nazi is above all things. I want to tell you something. A Nazi is below all things, Mr. Rockwell.
Well,
there is nothing lower than a Nazi. You're the lowest Nazi of them all. Mr. Pine, insults do not impress anybody with your logical ability. Whether you call me all kinds of names doesn't have any bearing on whether I'm right or wrong. Well, that's true, but on the other hand, you'll allow me the right to have an opinion, correct?
You can have
all the low opinions you want, but let's see you back them up with facts and ideas. You know, Mr. Nazi Rockwell, if they ever figure a way to get you locked up for good, they ought to put you on a boat and ship you to Haifa. And there in Haifa, they ought to sentence you to stay in that underground museum they have, where the people were made into lampshades, and where they have photographs and microfilm of the literally millions of atrocities committed upon human beings. That would be a fit punishment for you, and you should be able to sit there, and you should read that lore, and you should look at those pictures for the rest of your life. Mr. Pine, are you suggesting that, is this what you would be in favor of doing to me if you could? I said if they ever arrested you for a legitimate reason and were able to make it stick, that would be a good punishment.
Sneak out of that pretty good.
I do didn't sneak out of it.
I was trying to get anything I said from the front.
I have not broken any laws, and I will not break any laws. We operate completely legally.
You break the laws of common decency, sir, when you breathe.
I think that you break the laws of common decency when you're so stupid as to continually believe all this crap. You have done nothing but...
I can't be too stupid. I'm not a Nazi.
Well, you're ignorant because you don't know the truth, whether you call it Nazi or what it is.
I can't be too ignorant. I'm not a Nazi.
You don't know anything about communism. You don't realize...
I know everything about communism.
What do you know about communism?
I understand dialectic materialism. I understand the whole history of communism, both in Russia and in the world and in the United States of America. I have read Jared Jehovah's Master of Deceit. I will discuss any area of communism
I
you
like.
To. Let's take one area and see how ignorant you are. Have you ever read the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia put out by the Jews on the Jewish part in the Bolshevik Revolution of 1918?
I have read about the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. I haven't read that particular book.
Can you give me the name, the actual real name of Mr. Litvinov, for instance, the first foreign minister of the Soviet Union? What was his real name?
Is your point...
Wait a minute, you answer the question.
Are you trying to point out that all communists are Jews?
No.
I see you're sneaking out of it. This is an old Socratic sophistic
question. Well, listen, I could take some obscure book and ask you...
Litvinov's name was Finkelstein, Trotsky's name was Bronstein. Most of these people were Jews. Are you aware of the fact that Lenin and Stalin were Christians and that Lenin...
Lenin was a Christian. If that isn't ignorance, I've
been
here. Wait a minute.
Baby communists, later.
I'm going to out-hire any here. Mr. Pine, Lenin was an atheistic communist. Now, how can you say he's a Christian?
Because he started out as a Christian.
He wasn't a Christian. He was an atheist.
Joseph Stalin was in a Christian
seminary studying for the priesthood.
Yes.
Is that right or wrong?
That's correct.
All right.
Then he became a bank robber and an atheistical communist.
But he never became a Jew.
That's the important thing.
He was raised in a Yiddish family, and after he left the seminary,
the Yiddish family sent him to a Catholic seminary, right?
No.
Beautiful.
His own Christian family tried to make a Christian out of him, and a man named Kaganovich, a Jew who was on the presidium of the Supreme Soviet, adopted him when he became a Bolshevik, and he learned to speak Yiddish.
What was Khrushchev?
He married Kaganovich's sister. Now, I don't know how much you call that a Christian.
What was Khrushchev?
Khrushchev was a Christian, not a Christian, an atheist.
Not at first. He was a Christian at first.
How do you prove
he was a Christian? He was still nominally a Christian when he became the butcher of Ukraine.
You don't have to convince me Khrushchev is no good. I think he's a butcher and no good the same as you.
You've gotten
us off the subject. You know all about communism, and I want to examine you on the subject of the fact that communism in the days of the Bolshevik Revolution was almost exclusively Jewish. I have a report from the U.S. archivist, signed by the archivist, in which he says from the U.S. intelligence service, the Russian Revolution is run by Jews of the greasiest kind. That's the exact quote. Signed by the U.S. archivist that I have from the spot by the U.S. Intelligence Service. How can you deny this?
Stokely Carmichael was a horse of a different color. Rockwell romped him in their hour-long discussion with two breathless and befuddled liberals trying to join in on a Chicago television station shortly before he led the Great White March in Cicero, Illinois.
Stokely, you're credited with being the author of the term Black Power, which is so much in our dialogue these days. And you have defined it as economic, social, and political power, and not the tone of opprobrium which some people cast into the definition. Did you author it, and what do you think it'll eventually amount to?
Well, I didn't author it. The term has been around the black community for quite some time.
May I ask a question here? Mr. Carmichael talks about black power, and I noticed the Negro movement is regularly talking about getting at the white power structure, and they make no bones about what they think about the white power structure. Do you mean the same thing by black power as you condemn in the white power structure?
No, I think we need black power to be able to stop the oppression exploitation that the white power system has been using.
Well, Mr. Carmichael, surprisingly enough, I came here prepared to argue with you, and the first thing I picked up was a copy of Jet magazine for this week, and I see a quote from you with which I'm forced to agree. So Stokely Carmichael, chairman of SNCC, when asked by TV's Mike Douglas why integration was working, he said, because white people in America don't want it. And I'm heartily in agreement with that sentence. That's exactly what I think is the problem. And in order to get black power, therefore, you are going to have to use force, because I agree with you. The white people don't want integration. That's why they have to pass all these laws. And all the evasion in the world and circumlocution on the word, what black power means, won't hide the fact that the only way you're going to get what you want is by force. If you go into the Negro community in some of these real tough Negro areas where I think Mr. Carmichael is looked up to and where I think Malcolm X was looked up to, as I looked up to him, you will find that they don't distinguish between white liberals and white race mixers or white hate mongers, as they call me. They're after you if you've got a white skin. And I think that this is the inevitable development of what has been going on in our country for all these years. These liberals have been pushing and pushing, and eventually the Negroes have no other reaction than what they're doing.
Well, if that were true, why do you think that is so, Mr. Markle?
That the Negroes are doing what they're doing?
Yes.
I think the Negroes are doing what they're doing for exactly the same reason that you have a tribal war, or that we took away the country from the Indians. It's a question of one group wants what the other group has. The white man has built this country. The Negroes want it. The white man is not about to share it, as you're finding out everywhere. Every time the Negroes move in, the black man moves in, the white man moves out. Again, as Malcolm X said, the black man is finding this out, and the only solution to his problem is to begin to push harder and harder, because he's never going to get it voluntarily.
Under your proposals.
Is it that he wants to take over, or is it that he wants the right to be left alone?
Who, the Negro? I wouldn't call it being left alone. He's shooting firemen and shooting policemen.
Well,
where is our Bill of Rights, Mr. Rocco?
The Negro lives directly across the street from me, two doors away, and this man doesn't go around shooting at people or looting.
Not yet.
Well,
Mr. Rockwell,
I'm sure he doesn't think that I
listen,
intend
all
to.
Over the country, I went around preaching that we were going to have riots and violence, and we would hear about black power. People said, oh, you're a hate monger. The Negroes are only full of love, and they want to mix. Now they're shooting policemen, shooting firemen. They want to kill people, and they're doing exactly what I predicted. Now I'm telling you we're coming to race war. It's going to be a question of us or the Indians, and this time the Indians are black.
All right, Mr. Rockwell, where do you find in our Bill of Rights, where do you find in our Constitution any differentiation among peoples of this country?
Well, for instance, in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, I believe it is, states that black people in the states will be counted as four-fifths of a person.
Have you ever heard of the Civil War?
Well, certainly I heard of the Civil War. Did run into that from time to time. But the fact remains, the founding fathers of this country put into the Constitution that black people were four-fifths of a person. Or maybe it was three-fifths, and Mr. Carmichael is again agreeing with me.
Three-fifths?
Three-fifths. The founders of this country were racist.
Do you think this country is built on racism?
Of course.
On whose side?
On my side.
Thank you.
Now, you're beginning to be a racist on your side, but
power.
You won't admit
right.
it yet.
Let me ask
power
you
and black power.
Does that mean racism?
Certainly it means racism.
How does it mean racism?
Because when you have black power, it means the whites in those areas will not have any power.
You're
distinguishing on the basis of blackness, not on the basis of performance.
Now, how are we exploited in the communities in which we live?
Mr. Carmichael, I will agree you were exploited. I agree you were brought over here as slaves, which is disgraceful. I agree that you have been exploited for 400 or 300 years or whatever you say. That does not give you the right to shoot at white policemen and white firemen. It does not give you the right to take anything away from me by force. And you won't do it.
Anybody taking anything away from you by force?
You haven't yet. And you'll have a harder time than from some of the white people.
Do you live in the black ghettos?
No, sir, but when I go, for instance, like right now, I am planning to walk through Harlem and make a walk through Harlem. And I am told by everybody this is impossible. White people can't walk on their own streets in Washington, D.C. The police pick people up after dark who walk on the streets of our nation's capital. They say,
did you ever consider why this might have come to pass?
Sure, because the Negroes are going crazy and attacking people.
Did you ever think that it might be due in part to the condition of the Negro through these 200-odd years?
Well, this may be. The Indians have been under the same conditions, but I haven't had any Indian massacres recently.
Stokely, what do you say?
Am I a black person with white blood?
I imagine you got a little white blood somewhere.
Why?
Because you're a little bit more intelligent than the average.
I was about to say that's why you have black blood in you.
I got black blood now.
Do you have black blood in
have
you?
Have you got any proof of that? If
no,
you can
I'm
prove it,
you
can put me out of business awful quick.
You're saying that because I have white blood, it makes me smart?
Not makes you smart. What I will say is that I have found out that you've mentioned W.E.B. Du Bois, the author of the word black power. I'll point out that he's a communist, by the way, an admitted communist who went to Ghana. W.E.B. Du Bois, you couldn't tell from a white man. Most of the Negroes that I have seen, even Elijah Muhammad, they look white.
What about me?
Edward Brooke. Well, you look darker than most of them. Maybe you're a little dumber. I don't know.
And in a Fresno, California television interview, he voiced this optimistic answer to a listener who commented on the rapid spread of National Socialism after the commander's famous Chicago mass march and speech in 1966.
For 8 years, I have plugged away believing that when the people got mad enough at the race mixing and the communism and the degeneracy in the United States and the way our leaders are either weak or are aiding the conspiracy, I have believed that when they got mad enough, they would not want the Birch Society. They would not want any of these weak-kneed things. They would want something rough and tough. And I purposely built such an image. And sure enough, in Chicago, when Martin Luther King marched into those white working class neighborhoods, he pushed the button. At that point, it became possible for us to succeed. I have preached right along that we couldn't possibly have any large membership until the situation became such that the white people would have to fight. And in Chicago, it was a matter of either give up. You must realize the people in Chicago who were throwing the rocks and bottles before I got there had just moved out of homes because the Negroes had taken over their neighborhoods. So they'd lost their homes, moved into an area they thought was all white, and here they come marching in again. Now, those people were mad. Long before I got there, they were throwing rocks and bottles. And what I was able to do was to go in there and change, to transmute that violent and disorganized reaction into a political action. I was able to go in there, give them a symbol, give them the slogan of white power, give them speeches, and organize them politically. So the gentleman is 100% right. On August 21st, this year, in Chicago, in Marquette Park, I spoke to about 3,000 people. And they were not just teenagers and hoodlums, as you were told. They were all the neighborhood people, mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers and so forth. And they are 100% for us. They finally realize now that we've been telling the truth, and they are for us. All I have to do now is organize in Chicago. And as it happens to other cities, it will spread all over the country.
And now we return to that tape letter of long ago for these final words.
This is a short message in regard to what you can do about the treason and the subversion and the wrecking of our country, our Constitution, and above all, our race. For 40 years, perhaps 50, as most of you know, all sorts of groups and organizations have been attempting to do what they could about the subversion, mostly perpetrated by Jews, against our race and our nation. All of these efforts, as you probably also know, have come to naught. In every case, the Jewish weapons of economic terrorism, smear, the silent treatment in the newspapers, and all the other weapons in the arsenal of Jewry have been used to drive all the people that have tried to do something to save our country and our people out of business. The few that have managed to exist have done so only because their attack has not been effective. Others in the patriotic groups have become political prostitutes, selling literature and various activities in order to make money. And you will find, if you will investigate these sort of persons, that in almost every case they have never been to jail, they have never been beaten. They simply do not take the risks which are necessary to win. What we are trying to make America see with our effort here is that you do not win big victory without big risks. America and the white race are certainly worth the greatest risks that we can possibly take, our very lives and our liberty and those of our children and our wives and everything we hold dear. We won't keep these things unless we're prepared to risk them. And the reason that we have been losing for all these years is because nobody so far, until the advent of the American Nazi Party, nobody has been willing to risk his liberty, his life, his job, his family, and everything else. We have gathered together people from all over the country here in Arlington, and we have groups now ready in Chicago and Baltimore and Atlanta and other cities where these young men are prepared to risk their lives and their liberties and those of their children and their wives and their families in order to save this beloved America and our constitutional republic. There is no possibility of saving these things by writing pamphlets, by talking, and by making plans which eternally are passed around to each other. The only way that you can do anything to help is to support an effort like the American Nazi Party. I don't know of any way that you can better ensure the safety of your wives and your children, your America, your Constitution, and above all, your white race. I hope that you will not think for one minute that we're begging or trying to make a nickel. I think that it's immoral for anybody to make 1 cent on a patriotic effort like this. And I intend myself to remain virtually penniless until this fight is completely won. And I think that everybody else with us here feels the same way. If you want to help to save America and the white race, please do what you can to help us physically with your own person and with your cash. It will be deeply appreciated by the finest young men in America. Thank you very much.